Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cold Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Bridget.
And I'm Colleen.
And today we are welcoming Dr. Heather Hirsch. And Colleen's going to tell you a little more about her.
Well, I wanted to start the conversation by saying that I had found Dr. Hirsch on Twitter, of all places, because she has just recently opened up a clinic, and it's a menopause and midlife clinic. And I'm going to say that again for those of you who are shocked. It's a menopause and midlife clinic, and it's out of Boston at Harvard Medical Center. And she takes care of women in midlife and beyond. I mean, who could be a better match for us? Like a doctor who has a clinic who can take care of midlife. Mm-hmm. So I definitely tweeted her several times to get on the show.
Yes.
She graciously agreed to come on.
Oh,
and
yes.
So a little bit about Dr. Hirsch. She is board certified in internal medicine, and she completed her fellowship training at Cleveland Clinic. She specializes, her specialty is internal medicine and office gynecology, but she focuses on menopause, hormone therapy, contraception, and family planning. She also has breast health, sexual dysfunction, and urinary incontinence, which unfortunately in midlife, you could probably much check off almost everyone.
All of those.
Except for the whole contraception thing.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So she has just started opening up a clinic there. As I said, it's a menopause and midlife clinic at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And she evaluates patients for all different types of perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopausal symptoms. She likes, in her research, to focus on the inequalities and the unanswered questions in the fields of women health, specifically menopause, and also its role in chronic disease development, which was something that I meant to touch on with her, and we never made it that far.
So there was so much. Yes.
Yeah, she has offered to come back, and we were like, let me think about it. Okay, yes, please.
Yeah, we didn't have to think about it.
We jumped on that very quickly. So we are going to start the interview now, but it's really an amazing thing that she's 37. She's obviously a little younger than us, but she's focusing on teaching the next generation of doctors to actually hear women when they are talking about menopause and mental health and midlife issues. So we were just so heartened to hear that there is a new generation of women who are going to kind of take the lead and run with it for physicians that are being trained. So here we go. Enjoy the interview. Hi, everybody, and please welcome to the show Dr. Heather Hirsch. She is board certified in internal medicine, a physician, and she is in charge of the menopause and midlife clinic at Brigham and Women's Hospital at the Harvard Medical School. That's a mouthful, Dr. Hirsch, but we're so excited to have you on because you just started the menopause and midlife clinic in Boston, which is something neither one of us had ever heard of a midlife clinic, and we can't wait to talk to you to find out how this came about. So hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, please. Thank you for joining us. Now, you also have your own podcast, which we will talk about in a little bit, and you have so much information on your website, which will be connected also to our show notes, and we'll talk about that also. But can you kind of give us an idea of how this clinic came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my medical journey always wanting to take care of women. And I began in OBGYN residency, but I quickly realized that my skills really didn't lay in operating in the middle of the night per se. And so I changed career paths and then I went into internal medicine. So I became board certified in internal medicine. And then I did a 2-year fellowship at the Cleveland Clinic in Women's Health. Now, this fellowship is a little unique in that it is not an accredited fellowship. And all that really means is that you can really make it what you are the most interested in. And I came in very interested in postpartum and contraception and teaching, but I came out really, really feeling very passionate about treating menopause and midlife. And it was because I saw that it was the most underserved area in women's health by far. And I really found that it was just my true passion and that this niche really met my skills within internal medicine, understanding chronic diseases, and my gynecologic background or my GYN history of understanding abnormal bleeding and other uniquely reproductive women's health concerns.
That's awesome. So what, when you say it's a midlife clinic, obviously menopause too, what do women walk in with? What problems do they have?
Yeah, great question. So I thought long and hard about the term midlife because I wanted something that would encompass some of the other things that my patients very commonly seek care for that may not be the obvious things like hot flashes or night sweat. But let's say they're gaining weight and that's really affecting their self-esteem, it's affecting their motivation. Let's say they're noticing changes in their sexual health and their libido, and they're noticing that that is causing problems either within themselves or within their marriage. Anything from hair loss to new onset of dizziness, mental health issues like anxiety or separation anxiety if children are leaving. And so the term midlife was to really encompass those other concerns that women often have that aren't necessarily, you know, your typical things when you say menopause, like hot flashes.
Well, we often shout it from the rooftops that there's a demographic of women who are really ignored in society today, which is exactly the demographic that your clinic is catering to. So we are so excited to have found it. And, you know, I've listened to several of your podcasts, as has Bridget, and you really cover a gamut of health issues. It really isn't just menopause or perimenopause, although you do cover those in great detail. But it's also, like you said, a host of other issues that might be related to menopause, but not necessarily about menopause. Like they could be anxiety from, yes, going through menopause, but also from a host of other things in your life that, you know, midlife cause. Mm-hmm. So how has the response been so far since the clinic? Because it's only been a couple of weeks that the clinic's been open.
It's only been a couple of weeks. And for your listeners who may look at the date of this, of course, my clinic opened finally. I had a great long waiting list. And then we had to switch to some virtual visits because of the COVID pandemic. So it has taken a little bit of a step back. So to answer your question fully, I'm very excited. And the reception of this clinic in Boston was overwhelming. Women were so and are so excited and really just thrilled that they have a physician who not only has the expertise, that's one aspect, but also has the time, because a lot of these concerns are not simply things you can address in 5 minutes. And so having a dedicated visit just for some of these midlife and menopause concerns is so wonderful. I can see it in my patients' eyes. I know that if I could receive the same type of care, I would absolutely love it. And what's really nice is that we're an academic medical center. And so what that means is you're not paying a ton of money just to get in the door to see me, which unfortunately is what's happening in some places. There's wellness clinics for menopause experts who don't take insurance. It can be really frustrating because you can't get access to those types of physicians.
How many other clinics are similar to this out there? Do you know how many or any idea?
I can ballpark. So before I moved to Boston to start the clinic at the Brigham, I was at Ohio State in Columbus. And of course, I did my training in Cleveland's clinic. So there are, I would say, in an academic center, there's probably, I'm going to take a guess here, maybe 20 to 30 clinics like this. There's not a lot. Yeah.
Oh,
there's not a lot that are really dedicated to menopause. Now, what there is there are many more NAMS certified physicians. So NAMS stands for the North American Menopause Society. So there are physicians who may be more experienced in treating menopause and have a greater understanding of the medications that we use, but they may not necessarily have a dedicated clinic. They may also still be delivering babies or doing hysterectomies, or maybe they're your family medicine doctor. And so they kind of have competing things. Whereas just to have a specialized clinic with a physician who really just spends all of her time treating, researching, and managing menopause is somewhat rare. And yeah, I would love to train so many other physicians so that as the years progress, we can change this narrative, because it is so needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things that I really enjoyed too was that when I was doing some research on you is that you are educating the younger physicians mm-hmm. to start becoming aware of midlife issues. Because normally, I can't tell you how many women we hear from that say, I didn't even know I was in perimenopause. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. That
they didn't even know what it was. They didn't know what perimenopause was. They'd heard of menopause, but not perimenopause.
Exactly. And I think the only way that we're going to change the dialogue and change the narrative here is to have the next upcoming generation being trained by doctors like you who are aware. And mm-hmm. What a gift to be able to walk into a clinic and spend that time not feeling like you're crazy, but actually talking about your symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. That is the exact magic. You did the marketing all for me.
Yeah. Feel free to use this. No matter.
You know, I love when I have either medical students or residents who sit with me. And in my clinic, the way I set it up is I use a desk and we have two comfy chairs and we spend most of the time in that room. And it's so nice because instead of having a sterile exam room and sitting on that paper on your butt for 45 minutes, we just sit and talk, which is really all that you need. And so I'll have my trainees sit right next to me and they are just mesmerized by the whole thing. It's really a reversal of everything that they learn, which is not necessarily to their fault. It's more of a system of just the way medicine has evolved, but sort of this in and out, very quick, boom, 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 problem list. Whereas I really not only teach them the principles of menopause management, hormone therapy, and et cetera, but really switching up the way they learn to see, learn to watch their preceptors give care by really letting my patients drive most of the conversation.
That is so. On the subject of HRT, since we just touched on it, how does that work with your clinic? I know some people, like Bridget's on bioidenticals, mm-hmm. and some people are hesitant because of the research to go on any type of HRT. And then there's some people who want the natural approach. Do you have options for women when they walk in the clinic?
Yes, very much so. So a lot of the principles of my clinical approach is that everyone is a unique individual and everyone has a different medical background, a different surgical history, and different health goals and priorities in midlife. So while you may be having terrible hot flashes that keep you up at night and you're no longer feeling productive at work, your best friend or your neighbor may be saying she just has this horrible out of nowhere anxiety and hostility that just nothing like her. So that's two very different experiences. And so using everything I have in my toolkit that I deem safe, I really use for almost all my patients. And that's what makes it so clinically satisfying is that there is just not one size that fits all. So there's many, I always talk about lifestyle approaches. Obviously, most of my patients who come to see me have read or have tried some of those. We have non-hormonal options. But yeah, I definitely preach about the safety and efficacy of hormone therapy, especially when given within 10 years of menopause. I do promote FDA approved products, and there's plenty of also bioidentical FDA approved products, and spend a lot of my time just sort of myth busting, talking about why patients get the idea that either estrogen is dangerous and harmful, why we get the idea that bioidentical is better or safer, and really, really a myth bust, and then really sort of let my patients guide on what they want to do. And typically I'll sort of say, okay, I've been listening to you. Tell me what's been going on. And I kind of came up with option A, B, and C. And from there, tell me kind of what you think you want to do. And that's sort of how I tend to help guide them, but then give my patients some autonomy. And also, I think the education aspect is key, really letting them know and understand why I can sleep very safely and soundly with them taking hormone therapy, or if they don't need that, they want something else, and et cetera. So really individualizing the process, making my patients feel safe and comfortable is so important.
And we do not hear that very often. So
no, you
and
don't
it's not,
hear
it. Not from yeah. doctors, because we've talked to some great doctors, but just in general, hearing options. That's mm-hmm. just
yes,
that's
available
for women.
And on your website too, I noticed you have some online courses.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about your online courses?
Yes, I would love to. So I felt so inspired to start sort of social media outreach because I just had so much passion in my heart for all of this knowledge. And every time I would see a patient, they would tell me the same thing. How come no one ever told me this? Or my last doctor really, you know, told me I was too young or dismissed me or said it was just going to be, you know, a year. And I was so internally, and this actually has been building up for many years, which is why I dedicated my career to this. So I started an Instagram and Twitter and really kind of put myself on social media. And I realized quickly that even that didn't feel like enough. So from there, I created an online course, and I unfortunately cannot give out direct medical advice without seeing you in the office. But what my course really does is it provides you with almost all of the education I would give you in the office up to the point of, okay, what decision do I, what are option A, B, and C for you? And which one do you want to choose? And so I really believe it provides this amazing foundation for you to really cut through some of the, for lack of better words, BS that you see on social media or in the news or by people who are not, you know, NAMS providers, and also really gives you some resources to start talking to your doctor about them. And so it's wonderful. I also have sections in there on sexual health, such as libido and pain, your bones, which is so important, things like hair, weight gain, metabolism, all those things. So thank you for asking about my course. I'm really proud of it. It's great because once you purchase it, it's yours forever. And I can always go in and upload it and make changes to it. I also I'm about to release an ebook for $9 on how to talk to your doctor about menopause. It includes a letter from me and some things that they can read and just some good sort of go-to options. Even though I said there's no one size that fits all, I really tried to put a couple options up there so that if women felt like they were too far from a menopause specialist or just simply didn't have a menopause expert close by, they could sort of at least bring this and say, this doctor here wants to help you learn too, because I think that will also kick off what else needs to happen, which is a re-education of the current providers on menopause. So that was a mouthful to answer your question.
But oh, but no, it's great because that's so many doctors don't know right now. And like you said, with only 30 clinics, maybe in nationwide, so many of the gynecologists don't know this much about this time of life that every woman will go through. I always said, if they're lucky enough to live that long, they're going to go through this. They may not have the same symptoms, but they're going to go through it.
I agree. I sort of have this idea that in the cave days, we weren't meant to live past either childbearing or definitely not to menopause. And so I think we were meant to have estrogen, this hormone, this protective hormone for our whole lives, but we've outlived the cave days very much so that women spend a third of their lives postmenopausal. And many of them do feel very symptomatic, and a small percent never do, and they feel great. And that is wonderful. I never see them. They don't come to me, but the majority of women will have symptoms that last on average 5 to 7 years.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah, I think mine was more like 10.
I'm still in it. So there you go.
Yeah, she's still in it.
Lucky me. I think I'm going to be in it. I think I'm going to break the record and actually get it past 10 years. We've talked to people and we've done a lot of research, and we have found that it seems like the UK, England specifically, really seems to be further along in the menopause discussion. We recently interviewed Claire Shepherd from Know Your Menopause, which is a campaign that they started in England, and they actually just spoke on the floor of Parliament. But again, it's about women getting together and realizing that their voices are stronger together than separate, because she's not a doctor, but she met some people on Twitter and they were like, let's just get these posters in doctor's offices. So when you're sitting there and you look up, you could be like, that's me. Like that, I'm in perimenopause. I didn't even realize that. 'Cause a lot of women don't even have that aha moment, especially because usually in your 40s, for our generation, you have teenagers and you're just trying to survive. You're not thinking, oh, this anxiety must be from perimenopause, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or the brain fog, anything
right,
like that.
Exactly. Then you just think you have early onset.
Yeah, yeah. You're too embarrassed to say anything about it. You're like, oh gosh, I'm scared to say that I can't remember things because that makes it real. So that was something I had no clue about.
Do you find a lot of women are embarrassed when they walk into the clinic to even tell you the truth about all their symptoms? Or once they're there, they're kind of committed?
Once my patients typically get to me, they're so thankful. They kind of sit down with this sigh of relief, like, oh, someone will understand. Which means, though, that leading up to that point, they've gone through a lot of barriers just to get to me. And many of those women won't get through all of those barriers. They won't talk to their doctor because they feel embarrassed. They won't talk to their doctor because there's time constraints or the doctor leaves the room before they can sort of say, the thing you never want to say, I feel like I'm going crazy, right? There's so much stigma that women are crazy. There's this the hysteria and all of that. But that is how women feel. And to miss out on that validation that this is a physiologic and hormonal aspect is so devastating. So usually by the time they get to see me, they're very thankful that even the office visit itself can be therapeutic. I have some women who come to see me that leave and we decide that all she's going to do from there on out is journal. And I haven't provided very much in the way of what her other doctor has at the end of the day, except for the fact that she feels so validated and has received so much more education around what's going on with her. It makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. How about postmenopausal? Do you see a lot of women who are 3-4 years past the menopausal anniversary?
Oh, yes. Symptoms?
And what are those? I know those symptoms can sometimes be a little different, more like dryness and things like that, but what do they typically come see you for?
Again, really various issues. Typically, if someone is, let's say, in their mid-50s, late 50s or early 60s, they'll typically say, and I don't know anecdotally why, but they'll say, I've been having hot flashes for 10, 15 years, and I finally found you. I finally found you on Google. Can you please help me? They've been having symptoms just for years. Another big thing I'll hear is some of my patients now are empty nesters, and they want to be intimate with their partners again. And they'll say, I haven't had intercourse in a decade or more. And even it doesn't seem it seems impossible. It's so painful. Can you help me? And absolutely, I can help both of those people, women. And someone once asked me, when is the best time to see a menopause doctor? I said, there's never a wrong time. You could be in perimenopause looking for education like we just talked about. You could be right at menopause, a year of no periods and having symptoms, or you could be 10 years down the road and still be having symptoms. So ideally sooner is better, but it's never too late. You're never past the point where something can't be done. If these are really affecting your everyday quality of life, your marriage, your work, your productivity, you know, these things matter so much.
Mm-hmm. They do. And also, I wanted to talk on your website also, I love how you have just some answers to questions on hormone replacement. And I loved how you, all the questions that were asked and how you answered them. And I just want to remind people that to check out your website. And let's see, can you say your website again? I was looking on here for exactly what it is, but could you go ahead and say what it is?
Yes, of course. It is my name, heatherhirschmd.com. And you spell Hirsch H-I-R-S-C-H.
And I just loved it because one of them was just addressing if hormones are safe. Are they really safe? If hormone replacement's really safe. And then just great questions like, it's not helping. I'm on it. It's not helping. And I think you said to wait at least 12 weeks for that. So I appreciate that. I don't know if I want, you can answer all you want to, or people could look on your website, but you answer all kinds of things, breast tenderness, hormone replacement, everything like that. So I just wanted everybody to know about your website and your podcast, Women's Health by Heather Hirsch.
Yeah. Speaking of the podcast, I listened to a bunch of them, and one of my favorites was the top 10 medicines or advancements in medicine for 2019. And the first one that you talk about is a non-hormonal option that's not quite FDA approved yet, but it blocks the symptoms of hot flashes. Can you talk a little bit for women who are now probably taking a pen and trying to write down what you're about to say?
Yes. So great question. So there is a new drug being trialed. It blocks the neurons in your brain that signal hot flashes. So it blocks that receptor, and it's a non-hormonal, essentially type of drug. This means that perhaps we can stop hot flashes that in a way that doesn't expose the woman to estrogen if she can't take it or doesn't want to take it. And it's also not the other option, which we have, which is an antidepressant. So it's completely novel, completely new drug. It's called the KNDY receptor antagonist. And again, that just means that's the fancy name for is a blocker of this receptor in our brains. And that receptor seems to get more agitated at menopause. And so by blocking it, it sort of blunts those hot flashes. So far, this drug has been in, I believe, don't quote me, phase 2 trial. And phase 1 trials are animal trials. Phase 2 trials are safety and efficacy trials, trying to find out in a very small amount of patients for about 12 weeks, the right dose. And then from there, the drug will go to a bigger sort of phase 3 trials where they recruit lots of women and see how this drug works and either randomize it or remove any confounding factors, such as letting the patients be blinded, not know if they're getting this or the sugar pills. And so that's where it will be going next. So it still has a long way in terms of development. This could take, some years. And of course, right now there's sort of a research slowdown since there's so much focus on the current pandemic. But that is such an exciting medication because I personally love to have options for women. It's so nice that there's some more FDA approved, or hopefully there will be some more FDA approved options. And this also just highlights, and I think shines importance on the fact that we need to really consider symptomatic menopause and treat it. So I'm very excited. I'm hopefully can engage in some of these phase 3 trials, or if not, I'll be watching them really closely. Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing that you had put on those is migraines. And I'm one of those people who suffer from terrible migraines during my cycle. Yeah. And they've only gotten worse now that I'm preparing menopause. And I noticed that you were like, you know, I don't specialize in it, but I do have suggestions of like magnesium before you go to sleep and things like that. Do you find that a lot of women suffer from an increase in migraines during their perimenopause and menopause journey?
Very much so. So I have worked in the past very closely with neurologists. We tend to have so many of the same patients because of the fact, I think, that the reproductive cycle, whether it's when you're sort of at puberty in your early teens, pregnancy, postpartum, perimenopause, menopause, all those reproductive transitions are also times when migraines or headaches, but particularly migraines, tend to also flare and be severe. So to me, it's not a coincidence that as your hormones are fluctuating, so can basically your brain stability, right? Those migraine triggers. So it is really fascinating to see and learn about some of the newer medications that my neurology colleagues are using. And I get so much anecdotal feedback on them from my patients. So I may also be using hormones to treat their migraines. So, for example, I will have patients with terrible premenstrual migraines. They'll know the week before their period, they'll get a terrible migraine. And we use a combination of things that can stabilize hormones. And maybe they're on one of these newer migraine medicines, such as injectables and these sort of immunotherapy. So more directly targeted to what these medications need to go for to keep your brain nice and happy. And so you can keep working and be taking care of your children and your job and your podcast and all of these things.
Do you find a lot of the women coming into your clinic have smaller children now because a lot of women are waiting to have kids? And because I know you also deal with some fertility issues for women who are trying to conceive.
Yes. So very, very great question. We are definitely seeing that women are having children later in life. Me, myself, I'm 37. I have 2 very young children, may have another child. We don't know yet. but yeah, women definitely are having children later in life. And what I very commonly will see is sort of this new phenotype of a woman who may have had fertility assistance in her late early 40s, has the baby, breastfeeds, and just after she sort of weans, she just finds herself in menopause. And what a shock to have all those hormones from the fertility assistant, all those postpartum hormones, then breastfeeding, and then your menopausal. So great question. And I think that there needs to be more research done on the impact that later childbearing is having on either the menopause transition or menopausal symptoms. But definitely something that I am starting to see more and more of that story. It's developing.
Do you think that the more people that are researching menopause now and trying to specialize in it is maybe because more women are physicians now? I mean, I just was thinking about that. I don't know. Do you think that could be a reason?
You know, great question. I recently have been doing a little bit of digging into some of the menopause books, both for myself and for my patients to have resources. And a lot of the things I'll notice in their headlines is Dr. Such and Such, you know, brings this book to you and wants to get into the uncover the myths of menopause, and she knows it firsthand. Mm-hmm. I've seen books written by retired nurses who say the book premises, and nurse Betty also from the bottom of her heart suffered with menopause. And so, yes, I think that this gender has, or the sex, so this is biologic actually, right? This sex differences, and now that there being more women in medicine, and it has surely had to have played a role. That's an excellent question. Yeah, mm-hmm. And a great observation. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I think if it's not happening to you, you may not fully understand it. You know, like, right. Or if it hasn't happened or you don't think it's going to happen, I just guess maybe you didn't understand it. And plus, there is a trust thing where I think you're probably more comfortable. I know personally I am talking about these things with a female physician than a male physician. And you can't help it how what you are. So I'm not trying to knock them, but I do feel that there's just something when you're speaking to another woman about this.
Yeah, I think it is, for better or for worse, sort of undeniable. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It just is.
Another interesting conversation you had on an episode was talking about the 5 points for women's midlife health and the things that we need to talk about or feel comfortable with. Do you recall the 5 points?
I probably could come up with 5 off the top of my head and they probably would be similar. But I remember, I do know what you're referencing. It was sort of the demand more. We need to demand more. And I think it was sort of along the lines of wanted to empower women to, first of all, do things like you wonderful ladies are doing, is to get out there, put yourself out there, talk about your experience, whether you had a good experience or you're still going through it, and be raw and honest and open, because women are starting to really rally around this. And as you mentioned, in the UK and in Canada, and I think the United States is not too far behind, but I think women are starting to be more social media savvy, more tech savvy, and are saying, wait, you mean to tell me that's what all you have? Your only response is just, it sucked for me, it'll suck for you. It's like, no, mm-hmm. I need better. I want more. I'm demanding answers. And so I think that demanding more and from our physicians is another aspect. So moving off from opening the dialogue, talking about it, demanding more from our doctors, saying, no, this is politely, I disagree. That is not enough. I know there are people like Dr. X and Y and Z who are sort of saying that there are viable, safe, FDA-approved treatment options. So demanding more. I think another aspect was that menopause is socially charged. And by that, without getting too political, I really just mean all women's health issues, whether it's around any reproductive choice, whether if it's the beginning of your reproductive life or it's the end of your reproductive life, tend to be socially charged. So it affects the way menopause is perceived in the media, the doctor's office, in the workplace. I mean, we talk about, in fact, I was just on Harvard Business Review, Women at Work, talking all about how menopause affects a women's productivity at the work, in work, in their later lives, a time when most women are at the peak or the height of their careers. And so I think those were a lot of the points that I was alluding to in that podcast that I really commend both of you, because you are hitting on all of those things.
Yeah. Thank you. We appreciate it. And that's interesting. Thank you. It's interesting that you talk about the workplace, because that is an area that we've kind of just started talking more about. And we have talked to women who have actually had to leave their jobs. Mm-hmm.
just because of their perimenopause. And I said, you know, we've reached a point in our society where it's okay to take a mental health day, but you can't take a menopause day, which makes no sense. And yet, and until we get women in the CEO positions, in the corporate executive positions who understand and can relate to it, again, kind of like having doctors in those positions, I don't think it's going to move the needle far enough, fast enough until we get those people in positions of power, because women are still embarrassed to say, I have to go home. I don't feel well.
You know? Or just, we had a lady that we spoke to that said she was having such heavy periods that it was going right through her outfit, onto a chair. And she was so mortified. She left. And another thing I was thinking is insurances need to be available to cover a lot of these things as well, because it's something that most women are going to go through. And I'm finding when I do my research on different topics that insurance won't cover so many things. And just like you even said, you are at a education and a research place, a clinic. So that would do it. But other ones maybe don't accept the private insurances or any insurance for that matter. So that's another area that needs to be hit too, with this.
We like to talk about because we get mad about it.
Yeah, we get mad. I know. I have to calm down.
You're exactly right. And I make the not quite perfect, but similar metaphor of come a long way in terms of postpartum. So it's very acceptable for a woman to say, I need to go pump. And even then her male colleagues are like, okay, go ahead. But we're not to the point where we say, I'm sweating down my shirt. I need to go to my office and change into a new one, right? We're not at that point yet. Or I need to go to my doctor because I'm having so much vaginal bleeding. We're not there. It is frustrating. And then again, to your point, well, who would you see or where would you go? Or again, so that's why I really do think this is the most underserved area of women's health. We still have not figured out how from the patient side, how to navigate this. And providers are still, need to sort of be retrained in managing menopausal symptoms, internists, family medicine doctors, and gynecologists alike. And that's an assumption. There are many wonderful doctors that are males and females that I know, but the majority, it is sort of just an assumption of the majority situation going on right now in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What would you suggest for women who are starting this process and kind of saying, I think I might be in perimenopause, but I don't have a clinic around me? Would you say contact North American Menopause Society, or what suggestions would you have for them?
Yes. So my biggest suggestion has been to, when it's socially acceptable, go to a bookstore. Right now it's not. Yeah. And get yourself a journal, one that inspires you. And I want you to start journaling symptoms before you even get into your doctor, and really start journaling how long the symptoms last, when they seem to appear, what really is bothering you, triggers that you notice, etc. And then start with your doctor. You can definitely use my soon to be available ebook, which is, again, just kind of teaches you how to journal and really just kind of gives you that oomph of, all right, start with your doctor. And if you feel as though your doctor isn't really providing you with enough to reassure you, to make you feel comfortable, then I would say check menopause.org and search under find a provider and look to see if there is a North American Menopause Society provider near you. Now, some people will have this luxury and some people unfortunately won't, because there's just not enough of us. Another thing that I am hoping might change, and I don't want to get people's hopes up, but I'm hoping as we also embark in this new telemedicine journey, we all are kind of having to switch gears to telemedicine. And maybe both of you have started to just, see your doctor, or you will via telemedicine, so we can all continue to social distance. I'm hoping that we can break down some of the state laws that are really kind of goofy, preventing me from seeing you. And it's silly, even though you're in Tennessee, we're talking right now. And for your listeners, we're watching each other. We can see each other. And a menopausal visit is 95% talking, if at all, 5% exam. And I might not even really need to do one if your gynecologist or your internist has already done an exam. So perhaps there'll be ways where me or others like me can provide telemedicine services shortly or somewhat in the future that will start to be covered by insurance, because I think that they are starting to realize that the cost of doing a telemedicine visit, even for someone out of state, is going to be less than you continuing to see 10 doctors trying to figure out what's wrong with you, each taking a different perspective. One person thinking it's your thyroid, the other thinking you need a sleep medicine, a sleep study, the other person giving your migraine medications, the other person talking about your preventative health, you know, and et cetera. And so that's another thing that I see a lot in terms of my women who have symptomatic menopause. They end up seeing so many doctors when it's really just the one thing. So I hope that's in the future, just to sprinkle some optimism into your listeners' minds and mine too. I would love to be able to see. It's so silly that I can't see people outside of my state.
It is, especially like you said, when there's a specialist somewhere and there's these clinics and there's maybe 30 of them. That would be fantastic. So I will hope for that. And I will try to channel your optimism there.
And I just want to say thank you, honestly, from so many midlife women who are suffering, who don't know where to go. You're giving them an option and you're giving them a voice. Like you said, they're not crazy. And a lot of women feel that way. They're embarrassed. They think they're crazy. So thank you, honestly, from a whole group of women who would thank you.
Yes.
But we'll do it for you. Because I hope this trend, and Bridget hopes this trend, really starts to catch on. Because we're doing everything we can to scream from the rooftops that we are a demographic that needs to be seen and heard. Mm-hmm. But we have to work in tandem with so many other people. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I'm so thankful that we got to collaborate, because I absolutely agree. I stand on the rooftops and scream too. And for us to work together, wow, our voices are going to be so much more amplified. Mm-hmm. And I think that there will be some more, you know, U.S.-based Making Menopause Matter campaigns coming down the pipelines. And I know your listeners are going to be so excited. And I'm just honored to be able to be a voice for y'all, and to also help me spread sort of my corner of this, which is kind of from that medical aspect. But the more we work together and fill in the gaps, and we really, it's so cliche, but we really are stronger together, right?
Mm-hmm. We sure absolutely. Are. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. So thank you so much. If we want to make sure everyone knows that your website has so much information and useful resources, to please go check it out. We will have it on our website and we will have it on our show notes. So please check that out. Listen to your podcast, because it's great information, honestly, and thanks. It's just been so helpful. So we'll also have that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks. You are very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
So we hope you enjoyed listening to Dr. Hirsch. Again, she did offer to come back, and we are going to definitely take her
off on that. Yes, for sure. And I learned so much from her. And please make sure you check out her website and also check out her podcast, Women's Health by Heather Hirsch. And it is wonderful. And her website has so much information.
It really did. You know, she has online courses. She answers questions. She's very forthcoming with information dealing with everything from women's health to menopause and everything in between. So thank you, Dr. Hirsch. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have all of her information on the show notes, as we always do, plus her link. Check out her website. It will be up there on the show notes. You can go yourself as well. And our information will also be up. Please make sure to subscribe and share this podcast with anyone in midlife that you think might enjoy it, because we appreciate everyone who refers us out. And check out us on social media, right, Bridget? We're everywhere. We're taping this during the coronavirus.
We're so social distancing is what it is. We are doing that. We are.
We're so impressed with our social distancing that we can use Zoom. And
we are so good. And get our mics to work and everything. It's amazing.
All right. Well, we hope everybody is staying healthy and safe. And we will speak to you guys next week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.